this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report, HagmannReport.com. Hagmann Report, our guest, very special guest, Matt Bracken. And I was saying during the break, and I mean this, really one of my favorite guests. My favorite guest in terms of the analysis of current events, the social problems, the political, poli-sci problems, basically, what we're having right now. And his analysis is spot on. He's got a resume that would that people. I mean, his resume looks it's unbelievable. But his new book, and it's very, very, very good, folks. It is very good. It is The Red Cliffs of Zerhun, and Matt's just a talented writer. Now, for those people who think I'm taking too long, I'm going to tell you right now, we are going to skip the bottom of the hour break because the network break because every word. From Mr. Bracken, in my view, is extremely important. But this book, The Red Cliffs of Zerhun, it's written, it's really an allegory, and it addresses, it posits, will Western man rise to the defense of our civilization? I mean, or will we quietly submit to the dark forces?
That's right.
Of barbarism. And it's so well done. I'm so proud to have this in my library. And I'm going to get another one because I'm going to put it in the guest room. I've got family coming this week. This is a book I want them to read. No, I'm serious about that. So, anyway, Red Cliffs of Zerhun. It is out, right?
So it's... And the paper books are just percolating their way into Amazon. It's kind of a... palletizing truck shipment snafu about how long it takes to get. Anyway, I wish that the Kindle, I've tried to have the Kindle to coincide with the paper books getting out, but the Kindle's apparently beating it by about 2 weeks.
That's
but
why I
paper
asked.
Paper books are coming out.
Yeah, okay. Because I wasn't sure, and the delivery date is murky at best on Amazon.
Well, so. I have signed copies that I send out. So, I mean, when they're printed, I get boxes sent right to my house.
Okay.
But the pallets that go to Amazon, apparently it takes longer. When you have one pallet on a truck full of pallets, it's not like that truck goes straight to Amazon, is unloaded, and then those cartons are put right onto the conveyor belt. Apparently, the truck has to go all over Robin Hood's barn. Finally, the pallet gets to Amazon that you'd want offloaded. Then that pallet gets into a queue with a million other pallets.
Yep.
Anyway, that's something I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Well, again, Matt Bracken, enemies foreign and domestic. Before we get back to him, greeninnovative.com, go there, folks. Their products are fantastic. They're running a sale to the end of the month. It's you got to mention Hagmann, right?
Yeah, promo code Hagmann.
Promo code
it's 12 or 13% discount.
You need their stuff. You need battery chargers
and they
using salt water.
They continue to tailor the product to the Hagmann listeners, so you can.
That's right.
They've increased the number of the G-Mag power pucks you can get. They increase the numbers of batteries you can charge and recharge. And, folks, give Alan Riggs a call if you have any questions. The number's right there on the website, greeninnovative.com. You never know when you're going to need the power that comes from these rechargeable batteries in times of emergency. So make sure you go to greeninnovative.com.
Okay. Now, I want to thank Alan Riggs for that. Now, Joe and Matt, right before the break, we were talking about the seditious activity, really criminality of Comey, of Lynch, and even now former DNI Clapper and Brennan, former CIA. We were talking about that. And, of course, the target right now, in my view, is to kill either metaphorically or for real the president and the presidency of the United States. They're obviously trying to delegitimize both.
For example, I think that if Trump is goaded into firing Mueller, and that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility, I think that you'll have every Democrat vote for impeachment, and you'll have maybe 10% of Republicans also vote for impeachment. Unlike when Bill Clinton was impeached, that was straight party line. The Republicans didn't have enough. Some Republicans were too cowardly even to vote for it themselves. But if there's a call to impeach Trump after he fires Mueller, you'll probably see 10 or 15% of Republicans go along with it because these are deeply embedded swamp creatures, and they're also threatened by Trump. You have to understand, at least in my opinion, I would say a good half of the Republicans in Congress do not like being in the majority party at all. They get called racist every day. They get way too much attention to what they're doing. It's a lot easier to be a go-along, get-along, a minority party. You still get invited to all the on the junkets. You still get your payola. You're still going to leave Congress a millionaire with a gold-plated pension. Why take all the hassles being called a racist and a hater and an Islamophobe every day? It's so much easier just to coast along behind the Democrats. So I'm convinced that it wouldn't just be McCain there and Lindsey Graham. I think 10% of Republicans tomorrow would vote to impeach Trump, and he'd be gone. So, I mean, yeah, we're in extremely perilous times. There's no doubt about it. Very dangerous times.
What do you think the people's reaction to that would be?
I think we're heading for a civil war. There's a nexus between politics and media, obviously, but it's so tight I've never seen anything like it. You know, you've got the Alwan brothers. It looks like they're spies for Pakistani intelligence service as well as Hezbollah and Hamas. They've burrowed into the Democrat computer system. You don't see a minute of it on mainstream media. It's just all Russia all the time. So it's all about weaponized media and sticking to a party narrative. You know, the narrative is Trump is a Russian tool. That's it. Mueller's going to find something and charge him. Trump's going to fire Mueller. Then they're going to try to impeach Trump. Well, but I think that could easily spin off into a civil war because people won't buy it.
Exactly. And what you were talking about in the last segment, I didn't get a chance to ask you this. You know, we see, as you just said, the way that the media and the political world are working hand in hand to, you know, spread lies, disinformation, and paint Trump as some lunatic, you know, the despot. But the people, I mean, the media has less of an approval rating than Congress for the most part. And everyday working Americans aren't buying the crap that they were putting out there.
Something that's very important to understand also is a civil war isn't just going to start when 51% of the people all vote in a referendum. Let's have a civil war. You know, in Charleston, South Carolina, when they fired on Fort Sumter, the hotheads got a vote. You know, it wasn't necessarily they went door to door taking a poll. Do you think we should fire these cannons at Fort Sumter tomorrow? You know, the hotheads sometimes get to fire the cannons. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, 55% of Americans are going to wake up and say, let's have a civil war. You know, if for example, Trump is assassinated, if his helicopter blows up and they put it down to an engine malfunction, if he's poisoned by something that's like some type of an untraceable LSD, and believe me, groups like the CIA, this is right in their corner. You know, the same guys that could, for example, very plausibly cause Michael Hastings, the Rolling Stone reporter, who was about to do his next story was going to be on Brennan after taking out McChrystal. You know, they can very plausibly, via the Bluetooth connection, cause a modern brand new Mercedes to go full speed with no brakes. They can certainly get somebody to put a few drops of something into something that Trump consumes or something that he even touches that would not necessarily cause him to die, but might cause him, for example, to have a stroke or to start speaking like he's on LSD. And this would actually be a better form of assassination than shooting him, which would cause him to have sympathy. It would be much better to have him start acting paranoid or irresponsible. So poison would be a tremendous assassination tool because it doesn't cause sympathy. It causes people to think he's crazy and needs to be medically removed, which makes it more likely that that type of attempt would actually be made. But no matter what happens, if Trump doesn't finish the 4 years, I think that the hotheads on the right and potentially hotheads on the left using false flags, because false flags are used because they're effective. I mean, they're used in war after war after war. You know, the World War II, the Germans actually dressed up like Czechs to attack a little radio station and blame it on, you know, the enemy fascist or enemy commandos that hate the Germans. You know, it false flags happen because they work. And it would be very easy, I think, to trip this country into an Argentina 1970s style dirty war, where known politicians, celebrities, et cetera, start getting sniped, or start getting carjacked, you know, or start getting shot at their doorstep, or their kids are kidnapped. We're very close to that, I fear. I certainly hope that I'm wrong about that, but I see us teetering very close to the brink of a boiling volcano, and I don't know what might cause the actual tipping point. You know, there are so many of them, but I see the odds of Trump getting through the next 4 years without either an attempt to take him out or an impeachment as pretty low.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe we'll be able to push back. If I was him, I would advise going after Mueller every day and just mock him. You know, it's the Alinsky tactic of mockery, and just every day make a joke about Mueller and Comey being, you know, best friends forever, going back forever. You know, and how did Rosenstein, of everybody he could have picked, he picked Comey's best friend. They've had each other's back for 20 years. Not only as friends, but I'm convinced when you know where the bodies are buried, when you've helped to quash investigations, you know, when you've helped to bury things that are very damaging, that gives people control over you later on, because it can be revealed that why did that investigation get dead-ended? You know, who was the final person that signed off on killing that investigation? Why, it was you, Mueller, it was you, Comey, it was you, Rosenstein. So these guys all have mutual blackmail on each other, which makes it very, very difficult to penetrate. But that's why I think that this is happening right now, because some of these cats like Lynch and Comey certainly could be looking at heavy prison time. If you just look at the timeline, go to Wikipedia, go to any of these biography sites, and you look at where Lynch, Comey, Mueller, Rosenstein, McCabe, where they've worked for the last 25 years. Put them all on the same timeline with the Clintons. You know, Obama comes in late, but the Clintons and those cats, put them all on a timeline, and it's like musical chairs. Now it's my year to get the payoff working for a corporation for $5 million for a no-show job. Now it's my year to work as a U.S. attorney and make sure that HSBC gets a slap on the wrist and nobody goes to jail. You know, that's how this musical chairs game works in Washington. And they're very vulnerable. And the more vulnerable they are, the more desperate they're going to be to get to take out Trump. And the media is going to stay with them in lockstep. So we're really literally living in a kind of a Game of Thrones. And I can just only tell people that it's a poker game, and all we see is one card, if that. And the card we're probably seeing is a fake. You know, it's not even the card in play. Any cards we see in this poker game, we're meant to see.
It's a great point.
It's a play, believe me.
That's a great point. Mr. Brecken, what do you think about the reports of you mentioned the Awan brothers. What do you think about the reports of Debbie Wasserman Schultz being unable to function? What was the term? Absolutely, she's basically
she's just a blubbering idiot right now. There's not enough Xanax on the planet to get her by after the arrest of Imran Awan. By the way, I don't know. I know you're up on that, but there's four brothers and two wives, Pakistani intelligence connected, treated like dignitaries, working for 31 House Democrats.
Visiting Obama in the White House.
Exactly.
Many people think this is the first domino to fall series of many.
Was the arrest of, because, we need to ask you about this. They got Imran Awan on,
The guy might hang himself in jail. She might hang herself.
True.
And you'll never know if it was a hanging with assistance.
Yeah.
You know, this is also at the level where, you know, the guy could eat something bad and die of food poisoning in prison. We're playing at the level where, you know, I don't know for a fact, nobody does. Was Seth Rich, you know, offed as a political assassination? I think it's likely. But certainly the key players believe that it can be, it could happen. You know, when somebody like Seth Rich just happens to get killed at just the right time, and he's an IT guy that is a Bernie Sanders supporter, other people that are thinking, you know what, if I go against this Clinton machine, I could wind up dead. You know, I could seriously wind up dead.
And their body count.
And it's not only the body count. I forget one of the ladies that was harassed by the Clintons. Her name's escaping me at the moment. She was one of the ones that was basically not raped, but one of the ones who was
Kathleen Willie, I think.
But yeah, she had her cat like killed and put on her doorstep. You know, you come out every morning and you've got all four flat tires again. You come out tomorrow and you got four flat tires again, and your cat is dead on your porch, and people are driving by your house giving you the stink eye. It tends to make people very scared, and that's the level that these guys play at. You know, Fusion GPS, which is basically an Intel cutout firm, at the level that they're doing this quote unquote opposition research, which is really they specialize in inserting smears and libel into the public narrative, both for blackmail purposes and to discredit people. You know, at the level of this, if they don't kill the cat, they know how to hire the guy that kills the cat. Okay? And the guy that kills the cat knows a guy that'll kill you. So when you're talking about the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, and billions with a V dollars are involved, billions of dollars are sloshing around, for a few hundred thousand dollars, you can get people killed. Believe me.
For less than that.
And it's not Hillary Clinton picking up a phone and saying, I want you to kill this guy, Seth Rich. It's not how it happens. It's cutouts to cutouts to cutouts. Who will rid me of this, you know? But something to keep in mind also when you look at people like this Chris Steele character or Natalia V, the Russian babe. And this is how I look at it. If somebody was a SEAL or a Green Beret in his 20s, and then he works for Blackwater as a contractor in his 30s, and then he works, maybe it's at the CIA and maybe it's at an NGO, because if he's a NOC, a non-official cover guy, it'll be that he's working for an NGO, but he's really a CIA guy, a made CIA guy. Then in his 50s, he goes out and he starts a company like Fusion GPS. Is he a private operator or is he still a CIA guy? Right? So yeah. Fusion GPS is a cutout for nefarious deeds done by intelligence agencies. Is that the FSB? Did the original information come from the FSB? Remember what we learned about the CIA last year was that they can do when they collected these Trojan horse, what do they call it, the programs, these virus programs, they collect them and make a sort of a zoology of these. What's the term I'm trying to find for taking or hacking these hacking tools? So they can falsely put Russian fingerprints by using a tool they collected from Russian hackers. Misdirected attribution, right. So the Russian dossier, you know, looks like it's got Kremlin stamped on it. This is also what the CIA does. And I'm not saying just the CIA. Mossad, FSB, this is what they all do. You don't make a file that incriminates your own capital. You make a file that incriminates the other capital. So we're way into what the term of art is, the wilderness of mirrors. You know, it's one of those glass funhouses. Some walls are see-through glass. Walls are one-way mirrors. Some are two-way mirrors. And you have so many reflecting that you don't know what you're looking at. And that's where we are now. And unfortunately, to a greater extent than I've ever seen in my life, and as of back in the 70s, there were reporters who actually, you know, worked for the CIA. I mean, it's like what they did. After the Church Commission and other things that happened in the 70s, they weren't supposed to do that anymore. But I've never seen a co-opted American Pravda school of journalism the way we're seeing now. You know, you can write the news headline for each of the network, what's going to be on at 10 o'clock tonight. You can write it right now because you know what the narrative is they're pushing. You don't need to see what the news is. You can just tell what they're going to tell you at 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock. And it's as much as anything, it's omission as commission. In fact, I'm involved in a film project right now, a documentary film called Lies of Omission. And I don't know if you can see over my shoulder back on that wall anyway.
Yeah.
But Lies of Omission what the media just doesn't show at all. It's like back in the Soviet Union days, you know, the whole news would be the grain record, you know, the tractor factory set a record. They're not going to show you anything that's the real news. And we're into that American Pravda era today. And on the mainstream media, I'll be amazed if you can see the Awan brothers. Just like...
No, you won't.
During the Fast and Furious days, imagine. I wrote something on my website and floating around called Gangster Government and Sakharov's Immunity. Imagine a plot to discredit the Second Amendment because you want to get rid of the sale of assault rifles because you recognize you're never going to be able to turn this into a Marxist utopia while people have rifles that are effective. Never. So what are we going to do? We're going to slime the Second Amendment by racking up a body count in Mexico. We're going to deliberately get Mexicans murdered for the purpose of having an American weapon at the body that can be traced back to a gun store in Arizona. And the ATF and FBI are going to pressure the gun store dealers, are going to tell the dealers, we don't care about the paperwork for this one. A guy's going to come in, he's going to pay with cash that we're going to give him, and he's going to drive right over the border with, you know, Barrett 50 calibers, AK-47, semi-auto, AR-15s, and you're just going to approve it. And the gun store owners say, I can't do that. I could go to jail. Hey, we're ordering you to do it. In fact, there was one gun, a gun dealer family in Deming, New Mexico. They went to prison over this. They didn't have any evidence of proof, exculpatory proof. Another gun store in Phoenix, they actually, when they got this pressure meeting by the ATF, they had their own clandestine recordings in that meeting. So when the ATF came around to try to blackmail them, and then later, when Fast and Furious was all coming to light, they were actually going to charge these gun dealers with the crime of doing what they'd been ordered to do. And it was only when tapes of these meetings where they were being ordered by our ATF to commit these crimes, ordered to do it. That's at the beginning of when the whole Fast and Furious started spilling out. Cheryl Atkinson, a great reporter, she was involved near the beginning, but it was really two gun rights writers, Mike Vanderbilt and David Kodria, who got the leaks from the ATF agents. That's how people like Cheryl Atkinson ever found out at the beginning anyway. She's a great reporter, but it was really David Kodria and Mike Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt died not too long ago, but he did a lot of taping last year. And I'm going to be in this documentary along with Kodria and Claire Wolf. She's another, you know, writer like myself, you know, famous for saying, you know, it's we're at that awkward stage where it's too late to work within the system for change, but it's too soon to shoot the bastards. Well, you know, every morning when I wake up and I see that the news is just talking about the same stuff as yesterday, I breathe a big, heavy sigh of relief because, you know, our whole world can be turned over on any given day from many directions. We're in a very dangerous situation. I feel like we live in that Grenfell Tower over in London, you know, with the flammable sheathing and no sprinkler system. All somebody's got to do is make a mistake in any apartment. Electrical short, grease fire. The whole tower is going to be a torch. And I kind of feel like that's almost an analogy for the United States right now. We're a gasoline-soaked house of cards, and it's not going to take much to set this thing off. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I really hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong, too. And, you know, as much as the media continues to... What's interesting is, you know, I listened to Michael Savage yesterday, I think, and he made a point about, there's a story about an Islamic center in Davis, California, that's under fire for a 2-hour sermon that called for the annihilation of all Jews. And, you know, this is another area where the media is completely silent. But he made the point that, you know, the media is sitting there calling the Trump supporters deplorables and right-wing extremists and, you know, labeling them as the enemy when, in truth, they themselves are the enemy and they continue to protect these enemies. And one thing I do believe is no matter what the mainstream media is putting out there, I believe either the people know, for the most part, what's really going on. And I believe that the media's lost so much credibility in the eyes of the Americans that it's pretty much just a joke, or for entertainment purposes, or for the few percent that go there to have their belief system reinforced. But I say that to say this, that category, to have their belief system reinforced, maybe is only 15 to 20% of the people. Now, even with that percentage, that would be a heck of a battle if it came to fighting in the streets. But I don't think these people have the hearts and minds of the American people the way they think they do. And I'm thinking, you know, one misstep or miscalculation to do some of the things you're talking about will end in the total destruction of these people. Do you see that as a possibility?
Sure, it can happen that way, because, you know, there have been civil wars that ended up in a spasm. There was one in Finland where all the communists were killed. There was one in Indonesia and Malaysia in the 60s where all the communists were just wiped out. You know, just, it's like, we've had it, that's it, we're not putting up with it anymore, we know who you are, and there'll be an extreme shortage of left-wing professors on campus next semester. You know, because these guys act like they're untouchable. Every day they're pouring poison on the roots of the tree, and they're visible. We see you every day pouring poison on the roots of the tree that grows the fruit for our children. And at a certain point, when there's a break point in the society, and I liken it to a slip fault, you know, where the pressures build up and build up, and you feel little temblers, you know, little small rictors, but eventually there's a big release of energy. And at the end of that release of energy, you know, goodness knows what kind of a country we might be living in. My problem with any of these scenarios is when I game them out, you know, chess-wise, I game them out steps ahead, the grid almost always goes down. You know, almost every faction gets a veto on electrical power. You know, if you demand that the farmers bring food to the cities because it's an emergency and FEMA demands it, the farmers might say, well, the problem is the cities, not me, and I don't think that it's right that they have electricity and I don't, so I'm just going to go out and shoot these power lines. If that happens widespread, the cities go black. You know, their hackers could do it. People in cities shooting at transformers. You know, how come our side of the avenue doesn't have electricity when your side does have electricity? It's not fair. I'm going to shoot the transformer on your side. You know, there are a lot of scenarios. At the end of the day, there's no electricity, and it all comes down to food. You know, everybody needs to eat every day, and we have evolved in a magnificent conveyor system for bringing food from agribusinesses, you know, from 100,000 acre agribusinesses, a food conveyor that goes by all these stops, winds up on your grocery shelf. Often it's frozen. You know, they have these magnificent meals now that are combining a dozen different vegetables and meats. You just throw it in the skillet. It's a magnificent thing. I mean, imagine how many farms it all came from to be blended, put on freezer trucks, put on your table. That can all go away in a blink, and we'll be in a terrible, precarious situation because we don't have warehouses full of cans of food anymore. That's gone. In a couple of weeks, we're out of food. If the cities are in the midst of civil disorder, that won't restart. So I'm not sanguine about, oh, we could have a civil war and we'll win. And on the other side of it, there won't be any left-wing professors, and won't that be great? If that was as far as it went.
Yeah.
But my problem is that everybody gets a veto on electricity. Everybody who's aggrieved and feels like they've been completely shut out of the equation gets to walk over, you know, and turn out the light. You know, that's my biggest fear, is what happens in our cities. I mean, even looking externally, our enemies are not planning to build bombers to fly over Seattle. You know, they might get an EMP bomb from North Korea over the heartland. That's a possibility. But much more likely is just teams of shooters going around shooting the big transformers. If I was an Iranian special ops colonel, I would say, look, you know, in the meantime, while you're working on the nukes, give me 100 guys, I can turn off America's power next month. You know, I'll have them cycling into America as students. You know, they'll spend a semester in, come back for reindoctrination, new students, but there will always be 100 students in America, and I guarantee you I can turn off the electricity anytime I get the order. You know, if I can think of that, you don't think they've thought of that?
Well, Matt, April 16th, 2013, Metcalf right. sniper attack. What was that all about?
That was a proof of concept. As far as I'm concerned, that was the colonel reporting back to Tehran in a scenario, saying, this is what I can do with $100,000. You give me $1 million and I can put the lights out across the entire country just as easily. Instead of one, and this was very sophisticated. They went into, you know, infrastructure tunnels and cut fiber optic lines. They did things that were pretty sophisticated, but the actual kinetic attack was just Kalashnikov rounds, 7.62-39 Russian, shooting plate steel, the oil leaks out, and the transformer burns up. Well, that's a scalable attack. All it takes is 20 teams instead of one, and the power goes out across half the country or all the country. So I would consider that a proof of operation attack, a proof of concept.
Yeah, a couple of sniper rounds, or not a couple, a number, causing $15 million of damage.
It didn't take sniper scopes. It didn't take infrared scopes. It was strictly get within 100 yards, fire through a chain link fence at a target that's as big as a barn. You can't miss. You don't need sniper, you know, trained snipers. You just need guys that can line up the sights and pull the trigger. So Iranian students or Islamic State guys, not that I think that's less likely. Something like a kinetic attack against the grid would be more likely to operate at the state level. And I would say something like Iran would be capable of that. Possibly North Korea, even with agents in the country. China, certainly. And the beauty of that also is, you know, if you fire a missile at us, we know where it came from. If our grid goes down, who are we going to blame?
Yeah, and just to ask one last question to piggyback off the scenario you laid out. You mentioned FEMA, and we obviously know there's the National Guard and different government agencies. If there was some kind of civil war or widespread domestic unrest, how do you think these agencies would react? I mean, if you have one side of citizens going at the other...
They can't. All of the sworn federal law enforcement agents, all the badged feds with a gun, a couple hundred thousand, you know, compared to what? You know, 50 million Americans with guns? There are not enough. You know, the Katrina is very important to study. It was a natural disaster, but it turned into a civil disaster as well. But you have the entire rest of the country rushing to the rescue. And even then, it took FEMA a long time to, you know, move in through the damaged flooded areas and so forth. But if you take 50 Katrinas at one time, there's nothing that the federal government can do. It can't react to 50 Katrinas, which is what would happen if the food is cut off. If the EBT system, just forget the whole electrical grid. You just take out state EBT systems. Just go on YouTube and put in like EBT riot, and you'll see what happens when the cards fail just for a few hours. People start to lose their minds. So if that's when it's going to be restored in the afternoon or tomorrow. Imagine if EBT just goes down and people have no food at home. Well, they consider food from the government now to be a right. They consider that their money. You know, it's not a gift. It's their right. It's their money, an entitlement. That's what an entitlement means. They're entitled. People will lose their minds. Stores will be looted. There's no way that FEMA can react to it. I wrote a fairly lengthy essay a couple of years ago called When the Music Stops, How America's Cities May Erupt in Violence. But, there are not enough police. And after a few days, the police are exhausted. You know, you see what happens in France and Germany, or, you know, when they have these big riots like the G20 riots, they had to bring in police from other countries outside of Germany. And in a couple of days, these guys are so exhausted, they have to turn the threat level down. Like after the terror attack in the Belgian subway and airport, everybody's on high alert. All their special cops are on high alert, like doing 12 on, 12 off, day in and day out. After a week, they can't do it anymore. So if the pressure is maintained past a week, it just leads to a complete breakdown. The police aren't supermen. They don't have nuclear battery, you know, packs. They get exhausted. And then eventually they start thinking, I got to take care of my own family.
Absolutely.
I'm not reporting to work.
And just real quick, what you said about Katrina, that happened. How many officers decided to just leave the force when that disaster happened in order to take care of their own families or get out of the area? There was a huge shortage of police when that first happened. And that was just on a micro scale, as you said, compared to, you know, imagine if it's happening in 50 cities.
And so where's like the National Guard going to come down on this, given the number of scenarios?
That's sort of the theme of my third novel, Foreign Enemies and Traitors,
right,
where there's a it begins a year after a major New Madrid earthquake in southeast Missouri, western Tennessee, knocks all the bridges down. Western Tennessee is basically isolated. Unless you're going to fly in helicopters, you can't get food into Memphis. Memphis goes completely off the rails. The National Guard is not very sophisticated, so they can do things like, in a benign environment, in a non-warfare environment, they can convoy in food. But in a situation like what I'm talking about, the food convoys would be attacked. People would be much too desperate. And then they'll either, it would be like the beginning of Black Hawk Down, where you see the relief shipments of trucks of food coming into thousands of people, and they're just looted. What are you going to do? Turn your guns on crowds of starving people? I mean, it would go haywire very fast. And a big problem, it's just real simple math. It's such a simple equation. What's the shelf life of a bullet? Many decades.
Right.
20, 30, 40 years.
Yep.
Guns, centuries. How much food is there? Well, the food will run out before the bullets do. So we'll be in a situation after a couple of weeks where, for most people, there is no more food. It is mass starvation. But there are still people with guns that are hungry. So, you know, you can only imagine where that leads. And it's not a very good place.
But, Foreign Enemies and Traitors does address this.
And
thank you for that, folks. Matt Bracken's books, I can't speak highly about his books. Enemies Foreign and Domestic.com, go there, Amazon.com, but Enemies Foreign and Domestic is third in the series, Foreign Enemies and Traitors. Absolutely, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just want to really punch that home, because the way you've written, from your experience, your analysis is just tremendous.
Yeah, folks, if you go to my website, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com, or if you just look up my name on the internet, I have written essays like the CW2 cube, the Civil War 2 cube, sort of a meta-analysis of where to live, what are the most dangerous places to live in a Civil War environment. Because, you know, there are lots of places that are fun to live in when the electricity is working, but there are some places that are absolutely fatal to be living in if the power goes out, just absolutely fatal. And these aren't unknown, so don't be caught by surprise. So that essay is called The CW2 Cube. Then another one is What I Saw at the Coup, which is predicated upon the government deciding to take out its political enemies. When war breaks out in the Middle East, the grid goes down temporarily. That's used as sort of like a time for a purge. In the darkness, in the absence of the internet, who's going to miss these guys? When the power comes back on, they're just not around anymore. Somebody reminded me recently, when the Germans moved into Holland and Denmark, it wasn't, they didn't lay waste. They just basically rolled in and occupied the places. But in the days as the Germans arrived, the murder rate, you know, increased like 10,000% for that week. And you would think, well, was that the Gestapo? Was that the SS? No. It was grudges being settled. It was people saying, you know what? With the Germans coming in this week, my, you know, enemy neighbor that I've wanted to kill for 20 years, if I kill him this week, everybody's going to blame the Germans. You know, who's going to be doing criminal investigations if I take care of my enemies this week? So in a type of a scenario like a civil disorder, there's going to be a lot of coup counted, a lot of scalps taken just people settling scores because there's not going to be anybody investigating. You know, not to mention other pathologies. Think about, we have millions of people on psychotropic medications that would have been locked up for paranoid schizophrenia 30, 40 years ago. They're out in the community, living normal lives, most of them, God bless them. But a month after this happens, there's no more medication. These people are not only going to be off of their antipsychotic medications, they're going to be more stressed out, hungry, afraid, than they've ever been in their entire lives.
Then so you're going to,
yeah, you're not going to know who's walking down the sidewalk with a machete if he's just going to swing it at you as he walks past. You're just not going to know. It's going to, this would be to me an end times scenario, sort of God's revenge maybe, or natural law being reasserted. We're living in a fake existence right now. You have a quarter of the population that doesn't work, but they get fed. This is not nature. This is an artificial construct. Eventually, the plug gets pulled on EBT. Eventually. This year, 100 years from now, you know, there's never been a civilization that didn't have some collapse at some point, whether it was the Mayans or, you know, the Mesa-dwelling Indians in New Mexico. At some point, people go back and see ruins, and they don't know what happened to that civilization. But at the flowering height of those civilizations, nobody thought it would end. You know, nobody thought, you know what, as soon as we cut all the trees within 3 days' walk of here, we're done. Nobody was thinking that way, but it happens to all of them. But it's going to happen to us much faster, because now we're living essentially under a moon dome, a glass moon dome, and we don't even see it, we don't recognize it, but that glass moon dome is electricity and, you know, food that just flows into cities on 18-wheelers and trains every day. If that stopped, we're in trouble immediately. It'll happen much faster than, say, a, you know, collapsing civilization in Mayas or, you know, the any of those people. It'll be like the power went out and then the cities went completely ballistic.
Mm.
Very
wow.
fast.
Wow.
I hope I'm wrong, because there, number one, there won't be any, you know, credit, you know, down at the block. I told you all, you know, who cares? Who are you going to be telling? Surviving neighbors?
Yeah.
Odds are we won't know what happened. The power goes out, we won't even know what really happened. It'll be everybody has a theory. And it'll be hell on earth for our children that we wouldn't want to put them through.
That's right.
So yeah, I'm not saying this because I'm trying to score points to sell a new book. I could care less. I'm writing for posterity only. I mean, I've already outlived my expiration date. I'm 60. I never thought I'd see this age. My new novel, which is, you know, about the very future existence of Western civilization and the European Christianity, you know, in the continent of Europe. You mentioned the books, the Red Cliffs of Zerhun, it's an allegory. Muslim pirates come in and kidnap 70 girls, take them away for auction, for sale, or for ransom. What are you going to do about it? You're going to just say, well, we can't do anything about it? Well, then your civilization is done. You know, you're just saying, we're living at the mercy of the next wave of invaders. Did you ever see the movie Apocalypto, the Mel Gibson movie? He's not in the movie. When the natives near the beginning of the movie, the peaceful natives, they all got those crazy lip things and ear mm-hmm. piercings, but when the crazy natives are living their life in their village and they see strangers looking like they've just survived a Holocaust come streaming through the village, like running with terror in their eyes, you know your world's about to change. You know? It's like they're not just running because they're, you know, ultra marathoners. Somebody chased them through here. But yeah, in the Red Cliffs of Zerhun, when you're at the Europe is so weak that they can just come in like they did 200, 300, 400, 500 years ago, they can just come in and raid a village and carry the people away. There was a period when Europe was so weak for centuries, they couldn't do anything about it. They had no navy to go down to North Africa and, you know, conduct rescue missions. At right. best, they might be able to arrange a ransom for some nobles or something like that, but the average ordinary, you know, kid that got taken was never seen again. They're just a slave forever. And it was not a kind slavery. It was a very brutal slavery. You know, like galley slave, you're chained in till you die. Or a sex slave, you know, you're raped to death. But, I mean, you know, it's a, as a young kid. But, so yeah, that's, my novel is about the future existence of Western civilization. Do I expect to be around at the end of it? No. I mean, these things are processes that take place over centuries. What I'm writing is a continuum of something that's been going on, well, you know, Jesus 2,000 years ago, Muhammad 1,400 years ago, Battle of Tours, you know, more than 1,000 years ago. So this is a long, drawn-out process, and we're just occupying the stage this moment. So, you know, I'm Matt, believe me, Matt Bracken does not write these things, so he can walk around saying, look at me, I was right. I don't want to be right.
I don't want you to be right either. Yeah,
these are worst-case scenarios.
Yeah, that's my wife calls me Mr. Worst-Case Scenario, gloom and doom. I don't want to be right, okay? I don't want to bequeath this legacy to our children. But if we don't get our act together, something very important to remember about the, this Muslim invasion that's been going on for 1,400 years, you know, Egypt used to be Christian, folks. Turkey used to be Christian. They're not anymore. What happened? You did the... did the Muslims just peacefully appeal to them? No, it was convert or die, or accept the second class status where we'll wear you down, and in a few generations, one of your offspring will just say the hell with it and convert. Might not be you, might not be your grandchild, but somewhere down the line, your great grandchild is going to say the hell with being, you know, spat upon, taxed, raped, beaten, can't fight back. I'll just say the Shahada and join Team Islam. It works. And now we've got this, cultural Marxists that have taken over in the 20th century. Lenin didn't work. Stalin didn't work. But Gramsci, the Frankfurt School, the Columbia School, you know, the Fabian Society, they worked. They took over at the institutional level to the point where they could open the city gates and bring the barbarians in. So now you've got this incubus that's festering inside of every European city that's going to explode. I mean, it's much worse than Tours, Lepanto, or Gates of Vienna. It's much worse. This is very dire. We could see in our lifetimes, and I'm 60, in our lifetimes, we could see Notre Dame Cathedral become a mosque with a black flag on top.
I believe that.
In our lifetime.
Yep.
Yeah. If we don't start fighting back.
And see... Matt, if we fight back, I'm embarrassed even to use that preposition, if we fight back. If we fight back, there's going to be hell to pay across the board with the liberal progressive media, with these limp-wristed progressive communist politicians, wherever.
Well, there's actually a beneficial unintended consequence of this alliance of convenience between the left and Islam. Now, the left thinks that they're very smart and that they're just using Islam, but actually it's the reverse. Islam, which has been around a lot longer than the left, really the left only goes back in the modern era to the Jacobins, Illuminists, you know, the French Revolution. That's pretty new. 300 years?
Yeah.
250 years? Islam's been succeeding at this for 1,400 years with very few setbacks, such as in Spain. Very few setbacks. It's like a ratchet that only goes in one direction. But by the left tying themselves as an ally of Islam, when this thing finally blows up, they're both going to be seen as enemies. One is a direct Islamic enemy, and the other as the Quisling traitors, Quisling being the Norwegian pro-Nazi that helped the Nazis invade his own country. The Norwegians hauled him out and shot him at the end of 1945 after the war. So in the case of, in my novel, because I like to speed things up in books, in my novel, what triggers a reaction in France is a truck bomb at the Louvre, followed by the Eiffel Tower being taken over by terrorists, tourists thrown off, and then the top half of the Eiffel Tower being blown up. That finally, at least in the novel, I don't know if it would really work. That might not even do it. Might just cause the French to surrender faster. But in the novel, blowing up the Louvre, 1,000 years of Western art, and the Eiffel Tower, causes the French to just say, that's it. We don't care. Islam, Islamism, radical, you're the enemy. You've got to go. And they're pushed south out of France. And the no-go zones, this is another beneficial unintended consequence. Since the Muslims don't like to integrate and they like to set up enclaves that are pure Islamic and then gradually enlarge the perimeter of that, well, that'll make them easier to corral and then destroy. In the French case, in my novel, they use artillery. You know, they're not talking them out with hostage negotiators. they're when the Civil War breaks out, there's truck bombs coming out of the no-go zones, and the French military just says, that's it. You know, we're sorry, we're not negotiating. And so even if a quarter of the city looks like Stalingrad, or Lepanto or Mosul, that's the price you pay for reestablishing European control. And I don't know if that would succeed. You know, probably Islam works at this point, but it will definitely take a return to a very strong and warlike attitude in Europe. And it's possible, that reversion is certainly possible. The genes are still there. You know, they've been metrosexualized in from German shepherds into little poodles. But the German shepherd DNA is still in that poodle. You know, and his offspring can go right back to German shepherd.
That's right.
Very quickly.
It might take a little longer, the bite a little stronger have to be, but yeah, I understand that.
Matt, we got about four.
But if not, then Europe is lost. And that's why that's the allegory point of my novel.
Exactly.
They come into Ireland on a converted fishing boat. They snatch 70 girls out of a boarding school, killing the rest they can't catch, and take off. What are you going to do about it? There's no Irish Navy that can chase them and catch them. Who's going to go get these girls? Nobody? Because if the answer is nobody, then Europe has just surrendered.
That's right.
And that's the point of my novel, The Red Cliffs of Zerhun.
A fantastic book, folks. We got about
three and a half minutes left with you, Matt. I want to ask you about one of the big controversies in the news for whatever reason, even though this has never been an issue in the history of our military, is the fact that this transgender ban that Trump wants to impose on the military and the media backlash parading these he-she's around that say, tell me to my face I'm not worthy. What's this going to do to the military morale?
This is a cultural Marxist poison pill. You notice Obama didn't do this on his first day in office, just like he didn't close Guantanamo like he said he would. He waited until the very end, just like his orders about intelligence sharing among all of the different intelligence services. That was a way of ensuring maximum leaks and making it harder to trace leaks. You do these, he did these like right in his last months before leaving office. So he bequeathed a poison pill to Trump, which is this asinine, insane, cultural Marxist sabotage of transgenders in the military. Not to mention, they have like a, 40 times greater suicide rate than any other group of people. You know, they're troubled individuals by definition. You know, there are about 20 medical conditions like asthma that disqualify you from the military. You're going to join the military. You can't change your chromosomes, so you're going to either have it taken off or have it surgically remolded. You're still a dude. You're still a chick. You're just one that had a mutilation operation that's taking hormones. But you're basically not going to be, you're going to be out of commission. You're not a, back to full strength person either in either direction. So to me, it's complete sabotage. The benefit of it is that as a campaign point, they get their early licks in, so to speak, with saying that, like, look at these people, tell them to their face they can't serve. But the Ilinsky mockery is going to work even better against them. And there aren't going to be a lot of Democrats that are going to want to go to the mats to put more Chelsea Mannings in uniform, or these, flamboyant, in your face. Look, if you have these feelings of doubt and you can't keep them inside, then you shouldn't be in the military, because there's a lot of things you got to keep inside, like fear, like, I'm really not a hero, but I got to pretend to be for the sake of all the guys in the foxhole. You can't have people getting up and bawling their eyes out, I don't feel like fighting today. You have to be able to suppress your inner feelings. These guys are saying, I can't, I have to be me. Well, be me on your own time not in the military. Okay?
You
the
are
military is for warriors.
Absolutely. And that's, Joe, I think that that was the best answer to that question I've heard. And I was watching that on the, news on the monitor in my office.
You know, what's interesting is just the psychology manual, the DSM-5 listed as, you know, this type of gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
And you can't even get into the service if you have, other, you know, if you have asthma, if you have all these other things. And it just, the common sense and the rationale is just so far gone from these people and the points they're trying to argue.
Mr. Bracken, I don't know how that makes sense. How many fruitcakes like this do we got in the military? Seriously. Enough to worry about?
In the general population, we're talking about like, you know, 0.1%, the full-blown transsexual. But to change the military around to accommodate them so that they were literally putting out instructions to the female soldiers that you just have to get used to seeing male organs in the shower because they belong to a woman, huh? So that dude in the shower is really a woman, and please, if you look sideways at him or freak out, you're the one that's going to be in trouble. You know, this is just a cultural sabotage.
Dude, look like
that's
a woman.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
But the good thing is it'll backlash against the Democrats big time.
Matt Bracken.
You know, reality's reality.
Amen to that. Thank you so very much, Matt Bracken.
Thank you.
Your book is great. Thank you so much for writing it, folks.
Matt, awesome interview, too.
Yeah, and thanks for your time. Folks, visit Matt Bracken, his website, Enemies Foreign and Domestic. Get a copy of a signed book, too. The Red Cliffs of Zerhun. Fantastic. Highly recommend it. And, of course, all of his books. He's an asset to not just this show, but to our country. God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with Tim Alberino. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentations. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.